Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. I am Dr. Vincent Medici, and you have forced me to do this show. You, my audience, my clients, so on and so forth. I'm going to do a show today about psychology. The psychology, in a sense, of nutrition. I've got to give you the history and the backdrop. But the fact is, every single time you work with a symptom, every single time you ask the body to address its disease state, inevitably you end up deep into the psyche of your client. This is inevitable. Sometimes things resolve spontaneously. In other words, not even a conversation is necessary. But very often, what stops cold, what stops in its tracks a healing, is people's psychic patterns to manifest. They present themselves for scrutiny. They present themselves for resolution. Today I'll tell you stories. I'll tell you real stories. Stories that you might find even amazing. About that moment in a healing. In the healing of a serious illness. We're smack in the middle of it. When it looks like the coast is clear, and the sky is blue and the sun is shining, and those tumors are dissolving, smack in the middle of it comes that raging monster of that pain from many years ago that you didn't even know was there still, that was hidden in the body, that in a sense is the core of your symptom, the core of your disease. Few times in my 20-something years have I seen serious issues resolve without meeting, well, the true you underneath the face that you meet the world with. The defensive posture, the neurotic pattern, the you that's not really you, that you've learned to meet the world with, to adapt to those aches and pains of yesteryear when you were little, before the lights went out, so to speak. Emotion and disease. 150 years ago, you couldn't make a claim that there was a relationship. Certainly many of you remember as children in your teens that really you couldn't make the claim even 50 years ago. Psychoneuroimmunology. Western science really didn't respect that your cancer, your autoimmune disease, your headaches, your irritable bowel syndrome, your Crohn's disease, was really nothing more than a misappropriated psychic tension. That somewhere along the line, you had deranged into a stress syndrome, product of some sort of a pain, that was deranging the chemistry of your cell, that there was a relationship between your socialization and the aches and pains of it and what it could do to the biology of your cell 10, 20, 30, 40 years later. And surely the first logical response is, but how could I be 35 years old facing Crohn's disease or a colitis in my intestine, leaving the surgeon no choice but to cut out part of my intestine, how could that possibly be related to something revolving around the age of 4 or 5 years old? That's not intuitive. And 50 years ago, it was very counterintuitive. And 150 years ago, it wasn't even suspected. Three men changed that. Now, if you get to the website, and I hope you do, straighttalk.cc, I've got, what is it, 12 and 4? I've got 16 great pictures. 16 great pictures with 16 great quotes about three great men. Beginning with Freud, moving to Jung, Carl Jung. Sigmund Freud was a medical doctor, in a sense the founder of modern psychiatry. Carl Jung was another medical doctor. Again, one of the progenitors, one of the movers of what Freud began at about the same time. And then, of course, the infamous Wilhelm Reich. Reich was also a medical doctor. So three medical doctors, beginning with Freud, evolving to Jung, and for the story today, culminating with Reich. Three medical doctors at the turn of the 1900s, before which you really couldn't assert the claim that your illness was purely in your mind. Barely understood. So along comes Freud in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and basically says, if all things go well, from the moment the sperm meets the egg, both parents madly in love, properly married, gestate over 9 months their creation. Now think about this, of course, in relationship to yourself, and you'll understand the point of the show, or at least one of the points. At 9 months, this object of perfection, the best genetic contribution that each parent could make, pops out in an elegant way. No tears, no cesareans, no breech births, just pops out in 20 minutes, and both those parents in deep, blissful love, full love, lift that child up to God. And from that day until that child grows up, every flicker in the eye of each parent is on some level saying, son, daughter, I am so glad you're here. You have arrived. It's almost messianic. But in a sense, isn't that what, in the ideal of it, the birth of that child is supposed to be? It's supposed to be celebrated in the name of God as that child is lifted through the gleaming eyes of both parents. Now, there's no separating, as Freud laid down these tenets, these laws of development. There's no separating that from the child connecting to the pleasure zones of its body. And we begin, of course, in the oral stage, with that breast delivering the milk into the mouth of the child. That mouth is given its exercise. Sucking is pleasure. Sucking is pleasure through which the mother delivers its sacred milk to the child. Yes, it's colostrum. All those immunofactors, breastfeeding with rich, clean milk, sucked upon by a child, never doubting that every impulse in itself to wean will be met by a happy breast and a happy mother, glad to give her nipple. And so it sucks, and it sucks, and it sucks away. Freud is saying in that moment, the child is developing erogenously. To suck is a pleasurable exercise. And to suck with no tension about that breast will be there for every turn of that child, for every whim of its desire, that breast will be in its face. And of course, all dads and moms know defecation in those early years. That's just about changing diapers. But there it is on the other end, the other orifice, on the other end of the digestive tube. Now catch this. On the other end of that digestive tube is another orifice. And along that entire digestive tube, which Western science today, neuroanatomists call the second brain, is all this heavy circuitry from the mouth to the anus through the intestines. All the second anal sphincter, the ileocecal valve, the pyloric valve, the cardiac valve, the esophageal hiatus. All these valves along that tube from mouth to anus invested with nerve fibers connecting to nerve centers, connecting to the spinal cord, connecting to the brain, telling the child that to evolve from the sucking of the breast to the defecation reflex is just a ball, a big ball of pleasure. And so moms talk about this is potty training. We ritualize this into the potty party. The first day the child holds its own poop and goes to the bathroom, we throw it a party. We understand it. You understand it. And yet maybe it didn't happen that way. Maybe there was tension in the process. Maybe that sphincter was even violated. Maybe that sphincter was violated covertly. Maybe you were told you had to hold it in. Maybe you were told that you could only poop twice a day at exactly a certain hour. And if you deviated from that and had to crap in your pants and had to defecate into your pants, had to pee in your bed at night, perhaps you were scolded. Perhaps you were humiliated. Perhaps you were shamed. Perhaps that orifice was no longer, and the experience was no longer a source of pleasure. Perhaps it was no longer an esteemed event, an event worthy of a poop party. Everybody gets together. And then, of course, was the sacred wiping, the cleaning, where the mother or the father diligently, respectfully, professionally, and yet at the same time, on some level, joyously wipes the child. The wiping, the defecation as a source of pleasure, and the wiping as a source of familial duty. Mommy, where are you? I need a wipe. Can you remember? Best story I ever heard. Had a client in the office talking about her daughter. Daughter was three. Bright, beautiful, fully loved. The daughter's at its own birthday party. And because it's crowded, while the daughter's in there, defecating, sitting on the toilet, accidentally barges in a neighbor. Well, a neighbor was invited to the party. The door wasn't locked. The mother didn't have a chance to get to the toilet for the child's needs. And the mother's telling me this story. Child's sitting there having finished. And the neighbor walks in, and the child looks at the neighbor and says, Mrs. Smith, my mother's not here. Would you kindly wipe me? Now, you laugh. You see, the mother tells that story because she's proud. Does she really know what she's proud of? All of you get it. It's funny. It's cute. It's a baby story. But it's a lot deeper than that. Think of the esteem in that child. The esteem. Think of that child at 20, 21, 25, 30. Think of what that child has been raised to feel in the physicality of their being when they walk into a room, when they ask a question to a teacher, when they make friends at school, when they sit across a desk at a job interview and ask for a raise. Think of the esteem that drives that moment. Mommy is not here. Mrs. Smith, would you kindly take her place? I need a wipe. And you're three? Bravo, I say. Bravo. You have successfully completed the anal stage. On to that moment where the little boy or the little girl looks into the mother's eye. Those early stages, daddy's there. But mommy's driving the relationship. We call it the Oedipal stage. Freud called it the Oedipal stage, the phase in which the child is feeling in its being the touch between the parents. The bliss, which is intertwined with the beauty of knowing that every cell in its body is exalted to God. There's no word that better describes this as sensuous. Freud was misunderstood. The Oedipal stage was debased. It was desecrated into that the child is having carnal impulses, that in its subconscious it really desired sex with the parent. Well, Freud was a Jew. It was the turn of the century. This was Europe. He was misunderstood. What he was referring to is what we all know and see and witness in development. The child falls in love with the parent. There is a narcissism there. There is a celebration of mutual beauty. There is a reciprocity as both child and parent lift itself to God. You can't take the word sensuous away from that. Freud certainly didn't. The oral stage, the anal stage, the Oedipal stage. That child is learning pleasure in its being. The word love and support and esteem cannot be distinguished, separated from a physical feeling in the tissue. This is very important to understand. Because this story today is going somewhere. I have an intention behind it. An intention that's good for you to understand. It'll give you perspective along your way. You may be sitting there with symptom or disease or misery of some sort. Physical, psychological. The show will lend you perspective. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. I hope you get to the website, straighttalk.cc. Not .com, .cc. Look at the pictures. It's so much better. That Oedipal stage ends. It's the end of a point after which the child wants to take its bliss, the physicality of itself, and distribute it elsewhere, bring it somewhere else. Now, I painted the perfect picture. Just stated, the child is exalted, birthed, is smooth, oral, anal, Oedipal, post-Oedipal. It goes out into the world knowing it's loved and supported. It showers the world with that visceral joy within itself. It beams bright, the eyes clear and light. But that's not the way it happens, right? Somewhere along the line, parents divorce. Parents find they're not in love. Parents give messages intentionally and sometimes non-intentionally to their children that takes them repeatedly out of the bliss state. Things happen. Life happens. Wars happen. Famines happen. Unemployment happens. Plagues happen. Blankety blank just happens. We've all been raised with it. If you're 50, your parents were depression babies. Be glad you have food on the table. Finish that last drop on your plate because you don't know when the next day there won't be any food. You should be glad you didn't get raised where I got raised. You should be glad you can go to school. Back when I was a kid, there was no school. Get down on your hands and knees and praise God that even there's air to breathe. We were all raised with it. We were all raised with events that cut us like a knife, cut chunks of our soul out. And to that, we have to cope. And you all understand how to cope. You understand how to rationalize what's happened to you. So you fall down the stairs because you didn't hold the handrail, and you hurt yourself bad. And you get up, and you cry. And your parents pick you up and they love you and you figure out, you rationalize simply that the next time you walk down the stairs, you're going to hold the handrail. Lots of aches and pains we can rationalize. Dad lost his job and I can't get as many Christmas presents for Christmas because Dad doesn't have as much money. It hurts, but we can figure that out. What happens when the child can't understand what's happened to it? What happens when the child can't comprehend it? You see, this is where it gets interesting. Because the child has to adapt a rationale. It has to cope. It has to cling to a mechanism that allows it to maintain its ego structure, its ability to get up the next day and go to school to function. It can't fractionate. It can't lie there and die because two parents divorce, or a mother breaks a mother, or a father hits a mother, or a father gets shot, or a mother dies of cancer, or a war begins and a brother is lost. The child can't. You can't die in the face of everyone else's tragedy or the things that happen to you. You've got to get up the next day. You've got to. And so you do, but you can't understand as a child what's happened to you. And so what you do, the one thing that you'll insist upon is that what hurt you can never hurt you again. The one inevitable conclusion, irregardless of how you were hurt, why you were hurt, when you were hurt, the one inevitable conclusion is, I'm never going to be hurt like that again. This is where psychoanalysis and psychiatry got interesting. It said that we have an ideal socialization process, but of course life is not ideal. It's something that you call suffering. And to sustain a suffering, to overcome a suffering, to cope with a suffering, a child will simply adopt a defensive posture. It will guard the part of itself that it still retains, the part that's still alive. It will guard. It will cement underneath the brick layer of what we call the neurotic pattern, the defensive pattern, the way we meet the world. And it will focus in ways it can't even see all of its energy on protecting itself for the rest of its life until the pattern is resolved. Now, a child raised in a violent family that's a victim of violence or a victim of manipulation or a victim of abandonment might say, for the rest of my life, I'll make sure that I'm never abandoned. That's commonsensical. That's rational. I've been hurt, and I'm never going to be hurt again. That's rational. If you ask anyone that's been wounded in development, as we've all been wounded in development, we're going to say that's not going to happen to me again. I was criticized every day of my life by my parents, and I'm not going to be criticized again like that. We'll say that, and yet, and here's the point, and this is really the essence of psychoanalytic theory. Your ego guard, your defense, the part of you that postures itself into the world to protect itself, is the part of you that you can't see. You can't see when your boss or your coworker or your husband or your wife or your friend gives you a constructive criticism in a gentle way. You can't see that you're basically playing out your defensive pose to when you were little. You can't see when you're manipulating passively because you can't express yourself to your coworker. Because when you expressed yourself years ago as a child, you were shut down and abandoned. You learned not to open your mouth. You learned not to express and reveal your deep feeling because you'd be manipulated, laughed at, spat upon, and not honored. And you learned to protect yourself, but you don't see that you're doing that all the time. You can't identify your neurotic pattern. And this was the birth of analysis. Analysis, psychoanalysis simply said that you're across the desk of a doctor to find out how to better live your life because simply you can't identify those neurotic patterns. Well, Freud understood those patterns. If you asked Freud where to look to resolve those patterns, he would say, look to those four levels of socialization. The oral stage, the anal stage, the Oedipal stage, and the post-Oedipal stage. And somewhere along those four levels, you'll see where that child, that patient, that client was improperly socialized, and that's where it began. And that was the crux of Freudian analysis. simplification, but nonetheless, it distinguished itself from Jung, Carl Jung. I have pictures of Jung there also. And Jung is saying, if you really want to know where to look for the pattern, now this is relevant to you because if you really want to look to know where the disease is or the symptom is, the headache, the retinopathy, the cancer, the low back pain, the ulcerative colitis, the congested gallbladder, the gastric reflux, the autoimmune disease, the lupus, the scleroderma, the multiple sclerosis. If you really want to look to where that pattern is, Jung was saying, look to your dream, to the dream. The dream was understood. Freud understood this also. But for sake of explanation, we'll say Jung's centered its theory around analyzing the dream, the interpretation of the dream. In the dream was an attempt on the part of the person that the person didn't in the conscious state see to resolve its tensions. Its tensions. Remember the word tension, to resolve your tension. The purpose of correcting those stages of development was to resolve a tension. The purpose of resolving tension in the dream was to resolve a tension. That word is very important to stay with because it's visceral. See, we can say resolve a behavioral pattern. We can say change a way, the way a person makes a choice. But what we're really saying is to change a tension pattern. And I remind you that tension pattern is visceral. And that was Jung and his focus on the dream. Then came the infamous Reich, Wilhelm Reich, a student of Freud, a golden boy, a prodigal son, on scholarship to medical school in Vienna. And Reich comes along and effectively says, you can talk and talk and talk and talk. Freud's couch, Jung's couch, the couch that you lied in as they analyzed your dreams, Jung and Freud. Reich would say, you can analyze these dreams as much as you want, but the pattern, the tension, and here's that word tension again, the tension is in your body. Get it out of the body. And so Reich began to develop therapies to take that tension pattern out of the body. This is so important to you today as you listen to this story. It's so important to you because ultimately it's going to teach you. It's going to give you a perspective on why you spend your money on herbs. What is the higher purpose of the herb? And when you have to reach deeper, you should be given the higher purpose of the herb, the higher purpose of the cleanse, the higher purpose of the adaptogenic herb. So there's Reich saying, we can talk endlessly. If you are on the computer, be kind enough to go to picture 17, the last picture. If you're just listening, if you're on the road, if you're just listening at home on the radio, let me read to you a passage, just a quick one, about Reich's intellectual development. This is from a book called Reich, Rigardi, and Me, The Unhealed Healer. Great book on some of the essence of Reichian therapy. And I'll just surmise it. Early in his career, Reich found that patients would talk endlessly about their symptoms. And in his discontent, he started to extend his concept of psychic armor into that of muscular armor. Reich was the first guy that said, we can talk about your neurotic pattern, but we can see your neurotic pattern in your body. The way you hold your head, the way you hold your shoulders, the way you hold your hips, the way you walk, the way you look, the tone in your voice, the way your eyes look, you're giving away in your being, your viscera, what your pattern is. And so Reich's therapy devises itself as he gradually begins to touch patients where he sees tension and rigidity. So this is the great leap now in psychoanalytic theory. 30, 40, 50 years earlier, we don't even have a psychoanalytic theory. Now we have a psychiatrist, let alone a prodigal psychiatrist, who's decided to walk over to the couch and touch the patient. Touch. Massage therapy. He's doing massage therapy, in a sense, on his patient, but as a trained physician and psychiatrist in this budding field called psychiatry. Mind you, this is before we really gave people drugs. This is the beginning of psychiatry. This is before it was sold to perceptions of the way you think that had to do with it's just a matter of brain chemistry and will alter that brain chemistry pharmacologically. This is before anyone even had a notion of this. So Reich is now walking across the room onto a couch to touch a patient where he sees the tension that he knows derives itself in the muscle from improper social development. And lo and behold, as Reich evolves his therapy, things begin to happen. He watches patients as the tensions dissolve, show evidence that the autonomic nervous system begins to react strongly and powerful sensations called streamings occur and feelings emerge. And the article goes on to say, the paragraphs go on to say, many people find such active sensations frightening and uncomfortable. But if the therapy continues, the patient will ultimately find a total release of tension and experience what Reich, so this is the guy that starts this in the Western world, experience what Reich refers to as the orgasm reflex, a relaxation of the organism accompanied by a shivering, much as a cat does when it lets go of control. Now, Reich sees this happen time and time again, and people come out of this state by standing up and declaring, I don't know what it is, but I let something go. Bingo, the biggest day of their life. And Reich looks at this in relationship to classic Freudian and Jungian therapy and says, when someone can have this moment, this tops it. Because Reich's assumption, his speculation, was as that pattern, that psychic pattern of abandonment, of covert incest, of literal incest, of physical abuse, of emotional derogatory abuse, all these variations of childhood derangements, Reich is saying live in the body, and Reich is saying I know that it's out of the body now, because the patient before me is standing in an exalted state, swearing that their life has changed. It's as if they had a spiritual experience. It's as if they were reborn. And Reich is saying this, and he's writing about it, and he's doing it, and people are changing. Now, the tragedy of Reich, who died in jail, is that he started to treat cancer. Well, as a medical doctor, he could. But back then, cancer was basically treated with chemotherapy. Reich understood that this letting go, this shivering, this balancing through the nervous system, this freedom from the neurotic pattern that exhibited itself, that demonstrated itself with a physical convulsion. Reich understood this as a shift in the magnetic field of the body. All the way back then, he understood this. And so he began to take his therapy into organic disease, cancer particularly. And you can look him up. And you can look at his writings. He is one of the lost geniuses of our century, along with Tesla. Nikola Tesla, another one in a different field, but none of them. We've lost a bunch. Well, on this day, we resurrect him. Because Reich took this perception of disease to cancer, to autoimmune disease. And he basically said, looking at people If you trace them back to their childhood, you see creative energy deranged. It doesn't matter what the nature of it was. It matters what the intensity of it was. It matters if the patient, if the client can identify it. But it really doesn't matter what the nature of it was. Well, not in the sense that it's in the body. It's a tension pattern. And if you can get to that tension pattern, you can change it. And Reich said, well, then your cells will reorganize. Then those tumors will dissolve. Then you can cure yourself. Then your immune system will see itself correctly. But you see, when Reich lectured, everyone would nod their head because it made sense to them. But the point was, could anybody identify it? How do you identify your pattern? You, today, listening to this show, are doing this. But you don't know it. Maybe you know it. Maybe you have a sense of it. You know, Freud said, if you look at picture number one, it's a picture of Freud. Freud said, a man should not strive to eliminate his complexes, but to get into accord with them. They are legitimately what directs his conduct in the world. So you grew up in the hood, and your oldest brother was shot in the brain at the breakfast table. And that was very hard on you to lose your older brother. It was terribly hard. And so you grew up at 8 years old knowing that the world could be very, very ugly. Long before you should realize this, you did. And so you guard yourself. It's never going to happen to you. It happened to your brother. So there you are, 35 years old, and you're on the board of directors of a company that you've worked hard through the ranks to achieve that position. And you are known as an exceptionally aggressive businessman, a macho, forceful, physical even, businessman. And if you're on that board and you have an opinion, by golly, people are going to know it. And if they disagree with you, they better pack, because they got to be ready for a war. They better pack a lunch, because if they're going to sit there across from that table and tell you, that 35-year-old upstart on that board, that you're wrong, they better know what they're talking about. And it doesn't matter if they're 45 or 55 or 65 or 85. You lost your brother when you were 8. And you know how bad it can be. So this board, this is nothing. You'll destroy them, all of them. Can you see where that pattern comes from? Can that man at the board, sitting there in the board's room, understand he just might be overly aggressive, and that doesn't do him justice? He's going to make more enemies than he needs. Eventually, that great, big, strong tree is going to crack. You see, everyone's going to dislike him. They may even hate him. Eventually, the board members are going to band against him. They've got to get rid of him. And all he's doing is saying, look, I know what life is like. Life is hell. Now, we could sit here for the next 5 hours and come up with 100 scenarios like this. Daddy didn't tell me I was pretty, so I sleep with everybody because they all think I'm pretty. Daddy told me I was pretty but stupid, so every time I meet a teacher, a coworker, I make them know how smart I am. Because I never, ever, ever stop intellectualizing, asking questions, demanding their attention. They're going to know I'm smart even if I have to stuff it in their face. Can she see that pattern? Look at what Freud is saying. Freud is saying a man should not strive to eliminate his complexes. That's an odd statement. But to get into accord with them. They are legitimately what directs his conduct in the world. Freud's saying don't reach so high. Freud is saying just be aware of the pattern. Have an awareness so that you just might be reachable. So that your coworker, your wife, your husband, your child, your neighbor just might say, you know, Charlie, that was a little over the top. Freud is saying, Charlie, you're supposed to be over the top. You're Charlie. You lost your brother when you were 8. But you got to see it, Charlie. If you can't see it, it's going to kill you. Interesting statement Freud makes. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. 949-873-2127. 949-873-2127. If you need help. If you need help with your health, if you're spinning, if you can't figure it out, if you've stuffed all the herbs down your throat and you're still not getting where you need to go because there's an integration and you're not equipped to figure it out, there's a way to get to your body's intelligence through right action, herbs included. Give us a call, 949-873-2127. And if you can get to the website now, please do, straighttalk.cc. You can't get this stuff. Nobody's integrating it like this. You're interested in your symptoms. You're interested in your gallbladder problems. You're interested in your digestion. You're interested in your fatigue. You're seeing a shrink because you know there's problems, or you're not seeing a shrink because you don't know there's problems. You're medicated because someone told you there were problems, but you know that's a long path to nowhere. You don't believe in any of it, but you're downing herbs. You're spending money, but you're still fatigued. You're not integrating. This is about Sherlock Holmes. This isn't simple stuff. Sometimes you can't do it alone. That's why I have the school. We have 3 classes running. 2 of those 3 classes are over a year. One of them is approaching 2 years. It's an odyssey. It's an educational forum. It's cost effective, really cost effective. We give you choices. Choices depending upon how involved you want to get. If listening to the show on the radio on the way to work is what you can do, do it. Interesting statement by Freud. A man should not strive to eliminate his complexes, at least see them. Can you see your complex? Can you see it? Look at what Jung says. That's picture number 7. Picture number 7, Jung. Until you make the unconscious conscious, until you see your pattern, until Charlie sitting at the board can understand that he's over the top because he lost his brother, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. Oh, you got to catch that. Carl Gustav Jung, Swiss psychotherapist and psychiatrist. Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life, and you will call it fate. How many times have you said that? That was my fate. Fate. Fate implies lack of responsibility for what happens. That's what the word fate implies. And until you can see your motives, you will succumb to fate because you're undirected, certainly not directed by you. You're owned by your neurotic unconscious. Now, how do you identify that? How do you identify that? Well, you see, that's the point. When you get a symptom, when you get to the point in your 40s, in your 50s, in your 60s, where you just say, look, I gotta be doing something wrong because I'm 60 years old and I can't stand up. Your body's giving you a hint. You're gonna take an herb for that? You're just gonna send away for a bottle of herbs and it's gonna go away? Is that the limit of your perception? It's deeper, it's bigger. It's a blessing on the way. Often. Often. Often that symptom is the beginning of an odyssey Often that symptom is the beginning of knowing why you came here. And of course, that's frightening to a lot of people. That's frightening. Lots of people think they want to know who they are. Freud said this. Freud, picture number two. Most people do not really want freedom. Is that you? Most people do not really want freedom because freedom involves responsibility, and most people are frightened of responsibility. You know what it's like. You know what it's like to help yourself heal. You take that step, even if it's just a phone call to an herb company. It's a step. And you know the joy of succeeding. You know, that symptom goes away. You feel a little better. You feel like you did something for you. And you know what it's like when you tell a friend, you tell a family member. I mean, this is on the tip of everyone's tongue. I told him. He's such a nice guy. I told him, but he just won't listen. He won't hear it. He doesn't believe it. Freud is saying something. Most people do really not want freedom. That man's in love with his disease. Because the freedom involved from that disease means you have to take responsibility, and most people are frightened of that responsibility. See, there's a psychological context to a healing, and it demonstrates itself. You can see people and how they're going to heal, and if they're going to heal, and when they're going to heal, and long it takes by how much they fight their healing. This is the parody of the journey. People want to heal, and then they want to shoot themselves in the foot every single day, every single second. If you're a healer, if you're involved in the healing journey, if you share those relationships, what you watch as a doctor, as a therapist, as a counselor, as a health coach, whatever it is, what you watch day to day to day to day is people shoot themselves in the foot. That's the split operating. The healthy part of the self wants the healing, but the other part of the self wants to shoot itself in the foot, and it does. And so it becomes a war, not a blessing, a war. Why do I have to do it? This is just another chore. And you play out your pattern with your doctor. You play it out with your therapist. You play it out with everybody involved in your healing. So a word to the wise, don't do that. Consider. Just consider that because you're 60 years old and you can't stand up anymore, just consider that this is a doorway. Your body's giving you a hint. And if that door is opened with gratitude, if you can find gratitude, then one gratifying moment will lead to the next. And even the little flickers will become the big flickers. And all of a sudden, the switch will go on. And the chain reaction will begin. And the body will start to go into a massive autonomic shift. So let's hook it up now. Let's hook it up. What is Reich really talking about? Reich is saying that convulsive self, that person on the table that's starting to go into a shivering as the bands of autonomic tension dissolve. Read it on the website. It's in its own writing. As those bands of tension dissolve, it will climax as what Reich called an orgasm reflex through the body. And that Reich's jump subsequent to that into the treatment of cancer successfully, autoimmune disease. He was saying, what sweeps the country today? Open the meridians. What Hans Selye, Stress of Life, get the book. I've done shows on this. The Stress of Life. Hans Selye, disease cannot. It is inextricably bound to a sympathetic dominant state, a chronic sympathetic dominant state where the cortisol, where the adrenals are in overdrive for decades, produces the disease, the oxidative damage to the cell, all the way to the DNA, out distancing any antioxidant. outdistancing any cleanse. Those stresses decay the cell. And finally, the cell looks at its decay, autonomically driven, driven through sympathetic dominance. Those stresses finally derange the cell to the point where the cell's higher machinery says, apoptosis, dissolve thyself, go up in a big smoke. And one message from one cell to another message to another cell, and all of a sudden a piece of your organ is rotting away. Your brain, your liver, your kidney, whether it's cancer or autoimmune disease, you have ignited it after years, decades of chronic sympathetic dominance. Reich is saying to you, I am saying to you, go back and find your tension. What tension? You didn't have any tension. You don't have headaches. Your shoulders don't hurt. You don't have any pain in your legs. Why even listen to this show today? Suppose you take that arm and that leg and that neck and you stretch it. Suppose you test it. And all of a sudden you'll find you live in a state of tension you didn't even know was there. Pat yourself on the back because you just found your hidden enemy. If there's a devil, that's where the devil lives, in those tension patterns you can't see. That is why you stretch. That is why you stretch. No, you don't stretch. What you do is you go to the gym, spend good money, and look at how big your muscles get as you lift those big, strong weights. And all you do is bury your tension. You bury your devil. You bury your neurotic pattern. You bury that which deranges your cell. You bury it deeply, more deeply in your body so you can't feel it. You bury it under 1,000 pounds of muscle. That's not it. It's the reverse of it. It's to stretch that body because you'll feel your tension. But this is a nutrition show. And of course, the stunning point here is that is why you cleanse. You cleanse to clean the blood so that you can stretch to find your tension. You cleanse to clean the blood so that you can better stretch to find your tension. There's a relationship between the two. They're in symbiosis. The cleaner the blood, the easier it is to stretch. The dirtier the blood, the less efficient the body is at removing its acids, the more difficult it is to stretch. So you can't find your tension. If you can't find your tension, you won't heal. Well, that's why you're spending money on herbs. That gives it a whole different spin. It shouldn't be, really, for the most part. Doctor, I have this symptom. What herb should I take? It should be, doctor, I'm here to clean my blood, to degranulate it, to decongest it, so I can lengthen my tendons, so I can find my tension patterns, so I can let go of what the entire span, the spearhead of all psychoanalytic theory, pointed out, that at the root of every symptom, every disease, every sympathetic dominant psyche, at the root of it, is a painful child, one that never let it go. I don't run a nutrition clinic. I don't run a healing clinic. More than anything, my staff and I think we run an emergency psychiatric unit. Because more than anything, that's what we see. That's what we see. Psyches, each and every day, playing themselves out. Adults living as children, looking to resolve patterns. This is the way it works. You want the reality. You want the straight talk. You're getting it. The herb, the money you spend on the nutritional supplement, is to clean the blood so that you can stretch the tendon, so that you can find the tension, so you can find a tension you didn't know was there. No truer words are spoken. There, it runs the gamut. From Freud to Jung to Reich to Hans Selye to herbs to yoga to get flexible to heal symptoms. You know, Jung had a famous quote. Carl Jung had a famous quote. He said, show me a man who thinks he's sane and I will cure him. Famous Jung quote. You can't study anything on Jung without Young being quoted. Show me a man who thinks he's sane, and I will cure him. Absolutely beautiful. Stretch and cleanse and reach for the sky. Cleanse and stretch and reach for the sky. That child, before it was wounded, it knew how to reach for the sky. It felt the potency of its creative force, and when it looked up, there was nothing between it and heaven. There was nothing between it and its ability to manifest its dream. You want to understand cancer? You want to understand disease? It's the day you stop dreaming. It's the day you give it up. At my level, you can see it right across your desk. That man's given up. If you're coming in with something and you've given up, you got to figure that out. Because once you give up, once your dream is formed, your creative forces are on, your spark is out. Once your spark is out, your chemistry doesn't work. The biology of your cell becomes incompetent. We have marginalized healing to the point where we're trying to convince people that a pharmaceutical drug or an herb, are going to fix that. You're not going to fix anything. If you want to spend money on herbs, understand the higher power of the herb. It's so that you may cleanse, so that you may stretch, and so that you may once again reach for the sky. 949-873-2127. 949-873-2127. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Get to the website. Hear the show again. straighttalk.ccnot.com. Give us a call. You have a great week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.